still remembers fire. Grass remembers rain. Every scar tells a story carved out of pain. If you go digging, son, best mind what you find. The truth.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all. Let me forget to mute this. All are welcome in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Oh my goodness. It is about noon on a pretty fine Sunday. Got a little chill in there. It's not too bad outside. I'm running a little late today because I did what the kids call tying one on last night. I enjoyed the hell out of that myself. After months of nose to the grindstone, like, I don't even know that I can fully encompass all the work we've put into this freaking book. But after months of just grinding it out every day, writing, transitions, all kind of stuff, I finished my book yesterday. Well, I finished the first book, The Wrecking Yard, finished it yesterday. And I mean, like, finished, like, the foreword, the acknowledgments, not just the story. Like, it's finished. And at least for the ARC. And now, next part is you got to convince a bunch of people to read it. We're actually doing something kind of cool that is something our editor kind of invented for a little thing he likes to do with books he does. And he calls it Book Club. And we just get a couple of voices that we're interested in hearing their opinion. And we get them to read the book. And then we have a little discussion about it, just feedback before we send it off for the final ARC and all that good stuff. So I'm excited about it. There's a new author I just got exposed to a while back named Johnny Bernard, and we've asked her to participate. Or at least that's the plan, is to ask her to participate in the book club. And then another really good friend of mine that I've known for many, many years, probably close to 20 years, my friend Elizabeth Redman, she is an author in Ireland. And she's going to read the book and give us some feedback. So that's kind of the next step. And then I started last night. So one of the things, one of the initial things we thought would be really cool in the book is if I drew like a Tolkien-style map of the Wrecking Yard. Go to accompany the book. So I started working on that map last night, and it actually came out. The first draft looks pretty cool. I was like, oh man, I can't believe it was a lot of fun. I'm also doing a family tree in the front of the book that will just kind of be like a quick primer to tell anybody who's who in the book. And I think that's going to be pretty cool. But yeah, man. Yeah, I finished the last 25 pages yesterday. I mean, just buckled down, strapped in, and I'm cooked. I had a few drinks last night, boy. Woo, son. I sat out there on that porch till I was cross-eyed. Felt good. Enjoyed the piss out of it. Did not make it to the gym this morning. Decided I'm going to go as soon as I get this uploaded. Not hungover or nothing. I'm professional, but. Well, I did sleep in a little late. Oh, hope things are going well for y'all this weekend. Gearing up for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's my favorite. It's probably my favorite holiday. I just have so many wonderful memories of Thanksgiving over the years with my family. And since me and my little family have been doing our own Thanksgivings for a good, 15 years now. And so it's always enjoy. I usually try to do something different or interesting with the turkey that I haven't done before. I've done it so many different ways. We've fried it, injected it, dry brined it, wet brined it, spatchcocked it, not spatchcocked it, beer canned it. There's just, I've smoked them and grilled them. I've just oven fried everything you can think of. I've done with daggum turkey. I decided this year to keep it simple. We got kind of a small turkey. There's only three of us adults here that are going to be eating turkey. It's me, my sister, and Rachel. So decided that I'm going to do it in my little easy bake, my little electric smoker this year. And I'm just going to do it beer can style. I always appreciate the way that makes a bird stay juicy and taste. And I can always crank it up at the end and crisp that skin up. So do a little old beer can turkey. And just dry brine. I'm gonna go look for some smoke for some rubs this afternoon. I asked for some advice on the internet and a couple people named off some ones that seem pretty good, and I think I'm gonna run over to Academy and just see what they got. They usually got a pretty decent selection. This is just a cheap little pocket knife that I keep in my car. I like to have knives around. I very rarely use it, but I have all kinds of knives around. And I keep this little pocket knife in my car. And went to try to cut something with it the other day. It was duller than hell, so. The book thing has been weird. I've been, the problem is I have a hard time compartmentalizing. I really struggle with that. And when I get locked into a project and this is what I'm doing and this is the project there comes a point towards the end of that project where I get into a feverish pitch and everything outside of that project, I have a hard time prioritizing. So the last 2 months have just been me really just, all I can think about is the book. And it affects my other content, stuff like that. Like, it's hard to keep up with everything when you're burning all your daylight on one thing. So, looking forward to the break, kind of getting back into my schedule of releasing content, writing other stuff. I've had a couple screenplays, ideas I've been working with, and looking at maybe diving off into one of them. I mean, it's not going to be very long. We're going to start working on producing the audiobook, and that's going to take a few months. We're going to have to get to some point where I can read parts of this book without bawling like a baby. There's a couple parts in there about my dad that I still can't choke it up and get through. And so, yeah, got some work to do still. It's crazy to so I've read it a couple times now. And I like to sit on the porch at night and read through it, look for, any kind of thing I think I missed or ideas or whatever, and so many stories got cut. My editor has another document called The Wrecking Yard's Wrecking Yard, and that's where all the stories we cut go. And The Wrecking Yard's Wrecking Yard would also make just a fun book of collection of short stories or something like that. We may do something with it later on, or I don't know, but it's wild to see how much we cut out, but also how much is still there. I'm pretty proud of it. I think the book's good. I think this work I've done with Adam may be some of the most important work I've ever done. If not, it's second right here to the podcast. This podcast has taken a turn. We've moved into a different space, and that's okay. I stopped trying to dictate the podcast, and the podcast has kind of taken a life of its own, and I'm enjoying it. Not everybody's going to stay on the ride, but a lot of people have, and we get new people every week. So it's, but those two things, probably the most important work I've done so far. And also, it's a two-book deal. So, and most of the next book is already written. We got to start on it and start putting it together and piecing it together and building it. Anyways, it's, I got my watch on backwards. That's, told you, I tied it on a little bit last night. Forgot to start my timer. I am off. I am banging it out today. It's all good. We're going to get through this. Reset that. There we go. Oh, man. Today we're going to talk about my buddy Steve Vargas. Y'all have heard stories about him, right? All the way back when we were friends in high school. You know stories, you know quite a bit about Steve. You've heard about him more than once. It was me, him, and Joe. I can remember the day I met Steve, actually before Joey. Steve was in my biology class. And Steve, you have to understand, like back in the 90s, I would say like when we graduated in 95, right? There's not, long hair wasn't real popular with young men at that time. But Steve had long blonde, Steve was Mexican, but had green eyes and long blonde hair, like down past his ass, and was built like a tank. You know, he'd been working with his daddy. I've told you I was four. He'd been roofing with his daddy since he was 8 years old, carrying bundles up on the damn roof and stuff, doing construction. That's all he, when he got off, well, so first time I met him, he was in my biology class, and we all kind of thought he was crazy. Nobody really knew anything about him. And I tell you, I think folks were a little intimidated by him. But I really got to know him after, you know, me and him and Joey were in our VICA class. And VICA was Vocational Industrial Co-op. It's where you go into school for about half the day. And then you go to a VICA class where you talk about, you know, time management, all the stuff you need to be good at a job. Basically just how to be a good worker bee. Stuff that we have discussions like that and worksheets like that we had to fill out. And then he would talk to us about our individual jobs. And then we left school and we went to work. And it was just training you to be a good worker bee the rest of your life. You know, that's what they were trying to teach us with that. For guys they thought were going to probably not go to college, probably do something in the trades, something industrial. I worked at school printing press. Steve worked for his father doing construction. And literally, and all, like, when I tell you this dude was strong, I think possibly he's one of the strongest human beings I've ever met physically. Like, his physical strength was absolutely incredible. And he didn't go to the gym. He just did construction every day. But he was the hoss. He was the one, his family put it on him. He was the hoss, and he was the little engine that could. And they worked that boy. Worked him, man. And I became friends with him the same time I did with Joey. We all went down to Bolivar. And I heard them talking about fishing in class, and I hadn't been fishing in a long time. I really wanted to go fishing with them. And it was after kind of like me and my best friend Jay weren't talking anymore. And I had broke up with my girlfriend and didn't have a lot going for me. I started hanging out with these two cats, and me and Steve got along right off the bat. So, you know, I always tell you, me and Joey's personalities are pretty opposite. Joey was calm, quiet, liked a lot of planning, control, and I was very much flying by the seat of my pants most of the time, and didn't really know what planning was and was certainly not a controlled human. I was a little wild. Steve matched that wild side. He was a little wild too. I remember the first time I went to his house. At the time, they lived over by this AutoZone I worked at. I worked at AutoZone. Was I working at AutoZone yet? Yeah. I think I was already working at AutoZone. And yeah. I know I was. I was working at AutoZone. Because literally I backed out of my parking spot at AutoZone. I was when I had my little blue Ford truck, my 72 Ford. I backed out of my parking spot at AutoZone and this dude in a pickup truck run into the back of my truck, like hit the bed of my truck before he slammed on the brakes. He was just flying through the parking lot, not paying attention to what he was doing. I was already half out of the space when he hit me. Well, he got out and started hollering, raising all kind of hell at me. And I was a kid. I was basically taking it. And then somebody else got involved that had seen the whole thing and started telling this guy that it was his fault. And, you know, they were calling the law. And I just wanted out of there. I didn't want to be in his seat. My truck didn't hardly have any damage on it. His truck was a little screwed up, but it didn't really do much, that old Ford truck bed. It mostly hit my bumper, and the bumper did, that big old steel bumper did a bunch of damage in front of his pickup. I panicked, jumped in my truck, and left. Just bailed. I was like, screw it. They can just come get me. And I had got some paint that night. Right when I clocked out from AutoZone, I had bought some paint because I was going to repaint that bumper. Well, that bumper had the color of his bumper and stuff all over it, and there was a little bit on the bed of the truck. So I called Steve up. I was like, hey, man, can I come by your house? I need to do something real quick. And he was like, sure, yeah. So I pulled over there and pulled up in front of his house. He's like, what happened? And I was like, oh, this dude ran into me, and I ran away from the scene of the crime. Steve's dad, Big Mike, it was my first time ever meeting him. And Big Mike was this big old barrel-chested Mexican dude, long hair. He's part Native, they're part Native American too. Long hair, kind of long goatee. And he's in a leather jacket, man. And he comes out there, he goes, just pull it in the driveway, man. Just pull it in the driveway. And I pulled it in the driveway. And I started spray painting that bumper. And I was the whole time worried these people about to come looking for me. And they never did. They never showed up looking for me. But I just thought it was so funny. Like, his first instinct was like, yeah, pull up in the driveway. We got you, Holmes. And they pulled like one of their pickups behind my pickup and another one around so you could hardly see it. Like, just in case they did come looking for me. First night I met Big Mike, he had my back. And I'd never been around, you know, my parents were really strict. I'd never been around people like them. Like, first of all, the first time I walked in their house, they go in there, they start rolling joints at the kitchen table. Big Mike fires up a joint. They're not offering it to us. We're kids, you know, we're teenagers, but just openly smoking. And Steve, like, you go in his room, he had like black light and all these cool ass music posters. He was a music fanatic. It was just different. I'd just never been around a house where your parents weren't up your ass about everything you was doing. I'd never been in that situation. And they were also welcoming. He had an older brother that everybody called Little Mike. And Little Mike, also ridiculously strong, man. Ridiculous. Little Mike, he was kind of scary, dude. He used to get in some fights and shit, dude. And he was he had a little bit of a temper on him. You didn't want to get it. And he was just old enough. He's just old enough for us that it might have looked bad if he whooped our ass, but everybody probably would have just kind of turned their head, you know, because you might have had it coming. He was just that amount older than us. But I had never been around folks like that. It was a different kind of thing. And we bonded well right off the bat. In the beginning, a lot of it was just me and Steve running around doing crazy shit. They moved. So we lived out in kind of like the outskirts of A-Leaf, out towards, going towards Fulshear. And Steve's family ended up moving. There was a neighborhood of patio homes behind us, and they ended up moving in that neighborhood. When they moved in that neighborhood, we were all, Steve's like a year younger than me. He had just turned 16. I already had my truck, and his dad got him a 1986 GMC, just a little square body, short bed, C1500 half ton, had 350 in it, automatic, just your run of the mill. It was clean though. Booger was clean. I'll say that. It was black. I always liked the 86's grill. I like that. I like that front end out of the square bodies. The 86 is one I really enjoy. And I prefer GMC myself. I've always preferred GMC over Chevrolet. Just styling wise. I just like the GMC styling. It's a cool little pickup, man. Good little pickup for dude's first truck. They always had all these plans they was gonna paint it. Steve's dad, Big Mike, when he was younger, he worked at the Greyhound plant in New Mexico. And literally, he told me all he did was he would go in there at night, and he had a scaffold that would go up and down, and they had like train tracks through the shop. And he'd go there and get his sprayer set up, put his little coveralls on, get his sprayer set up, and he'd be on one side, and there'd be another dude on the other side of the shop, and the Greyhound bus body would roll through the shop on a train trolley, and literally as it was rolling through, they would spray it, and then it would stop, and then they'd spray back going the other way, it would roll back, they'd spray back going. It'd go back and forth about five times before they spray it. They'd drop like three coats on it real quick. Get up there, spray the top, do a couple coats on the top. But two guys painting this whole Greyhound bus, just spraying from the sides, you know, kind of like an assembly line set up. Big Mike was always telling us stories about working at the Greyhound place because, you know, this is when he was drugging and drinking and partying, and he said he'd come in there three sheets to the wind. He said, but I can still spray that bus. He said, I might not open my eyes, but I can spray that bus. But he was a pretty good painter, a hell of a residential painter. The man had an eye for paint. He was real good at it. And he had painted some cars. They were going to paint Steve's truck at some point. It wasn't in bad shape, though. It was a clean pickup. The paint on it was still in pretty good shape. They just were going to make it, you know, it was going to be like a father's son. They was going to fix it up, make it sharp, that kind of thing. The first thing Steve did was go over to the Pulga, which is the Mexican flea market, and buy a big old box with some big old 12-inch speakers and an amp and a head unit, Kenwood, I think. That's back when we had the ones where you take the face off the stereo. And he put that box behind the seat in that single cab. So Steve drove like this up on the steering wheel. And Steve drove up on the steering wheel, like almost pressed into it, with his arm up like this. And he rode in that truck, like just bolt upright, real close to the dash because of them speakers. And when them speakers were going, son, people four cars over could hear your music. But you weren't hearing that music in the cab, you were feeling it. You were living it. It was being pumped through your body. I may have ultrasonic frequencies in me. Got something screwed up on kind of them speakers. Us putting ourselves through that. Steve is a big hip-hop. I often tell people Steve's who ruined Pink Floyd for me. Because Steve went through a Pink Floyd phase. Where if I never hear Pink Floyd again, it'll be too soon. Honestly. I listened to so much Pink Floyd during Steve's Pink Floyd phase that if I never hear Pink Floyd again, it will honestly be too soon. Steve's who turned me on to Tupac. He had all eyes on me album. We listened to that every day. We would go to lunch, and we would either take my truck or his truck, and we'd go. There was a Taco Bell down the street from the school, and we'd haul ass down to that Taco Bell, and it was just usually banging Tupac or Looney's. There was a Looney's song, I Got Five on it. And we got excited. We went and bought the album from the Sam Goody. That's back when you had to go to a music store. We went and bought the album from Sam Goody. And it was basically just, the whole album was like 15 different versions of the same song. Every song was I Got Five on it. It was just a different version of I Got Five on it. But his family was a whole cast of characters. His mom, La, she was something else, man. She somehow kept them all in line. He had a younger sister, little La, that was about my sister's age, that ended up marrying one of my old friends, Randy Lee, my tattoo artist, who did this. Like, they've been married a long time, have a great life together. They were tight-knit. Once you were a part of that unit, you were a part of that unit. That's where I met my friend Marzi Montazeri. So there were all kind of musicians. Steve's dad wanted to be a musician. Big Mike wanted to be a musician so bad he could taste it. And he was real good at percussion. He had a drum set up. He played bongos and all that kind of stuff. And he was fire on them drums, but his favorite thing was accordion. And he would play accordion with some Tejano bands, sit in with them, and he knew them all. Eliodon Cervantes, he played with all them bands that played down there in South Texas. And we would go to these Tejano music festivals and stuff all the time for free because Steve's dad was going to play with the band, and we would just hang out and have a good time. So I spent a lot of time going to events like that and being a part of that scene, and it was... just like any other music scene, a lot of drugs, a lot of drinking and partying. We weren't doing a lot of that yet. We were still teenagers at that point. But it does make me wonder. So me and Steve both got into drugs, both got into alcohol later on in life. One of us raised by parents who were very strict about all that sort of stuff and didn't want it around. And one of us raised by parents who were kind of like, hey, yeah, just take responsibility for your own choices. And we both ended up having problems with that stuff. And so it's why I often sort of take it with a grain of salt when somebody goes, you know, my kid turned out pretty good. I must have done a good job. Like, yeah, or you just got lucky. Or you just got lucky, you know. I'm not 100% sure. I've seen people turn out good that come from terrible environments. I've seen people turn out bad that come from great environments. Sometimes you just get lucky. I hope I get lucky with my kids. I like them, you know, which is, it's a pretty good start. But we did all that. I met Marzi. Marzi hung out over there. He had this buddy named Snake. I can't remember the name of his band. Snake was cool, though. Snake had this Volkswagen Bug. That it was this little hot rod VW Bug, and the whole back, when you were inside the Bug, the whole back seat in that area was instead just a clear plexiglass shield. And so you could see that detailed engine and the transaxle and everything from in there. It was really cool. It was a fast little booger. And it didn't matter, like, when they threw, like, Big Mike, like, throw down on the grill all the time. It was a common thing, get off work, stop, get some meat, get home, fire the big grill up, start cooking meat, start drinking. All the neighbors would be over there. Their musician friends would show up. It was a party would materialize at that house in minutes. You would just be there hanging out with your buddy, and y'all would come out of his room, and all of a sudden there'd be 40 people in the house playing music, drinking, having a good time, smoking weed. You know, nobody did a lot of hard stuff around there, you know, till later on. That come later. And I spent more hours at their house and around their family than probably just about anybody except Joey. And a lot of times it was me, Joey, and Steve together. They had a Steve's had a best friend named Carlos that he grew up with. And Carlos, oh, I remember Carlos had this Chevy Nova with a 307 in it. And somebody convinced him that turning his air cleaner lid upside down would make it louder and faster. It made it louder. It didn't make it any faster. But after he turned that air cleaner over, every time Carlos pulled up, he'd be revving out, revving that old 307 up, trying to make it sound like it had something. Oh, it was slow as piss. Carlos ended up doing some prison time, I think, if I remember correctly. Carlos got drunk one night over off Derry Ashford. There was a police station called West Side Command for HPD. And behind West Side Command was a huge cattle pasture. And I think it's probably all neighborhoods by now. But it was a big old cattle pasture. And Carlos one night had a little too much to drink. This is after high school. Got over there in his pickup truck and started picking mushrooms in the cow pasture. And was literally driving around this cow pasture, digging through cow shit and stumbling back to his truck and compiling these mushrooms. And they were landing one of the police helicopters there at West Side Command. And the cops up on the landing deck just happened to look over and see this idiot out there in the cow pasture with his flashlight. And literally, three cops just walked across the field and arrested this dude. It got him, and, you know, mushrooms are big. Big penalties in Texas, so ended up screwing on Carlos. He got put in the pokey over that for a few years. But also, you know, you got caught picking mushrooms behind the police station, for Pete's sake. What you think was gonna happen? Big Mike had some brothers, but his younger brother was a dude named Chris. And Chris went a little harder in the paint than Big Mike. He got way off into the drugs. Chris screwed me up one night, a few years after high school. We was hanging out over at their house. They had some kind of party going on, some sort of thing. I hadn't really smoked a lot of weed yet. I had tried it one time when I was like 18 at a field party, and it made my eyes swell up, and I like had like an allergic reaction to it or something. I didn't like it. And then one time at this party at their place, I go out there. Chris is sitting on the tailgate of his truck, and he's like, "Hey man, you want to hit this?" He had this J, and I was trying to look cool from Steve's uncle, you know. And so I was like, yeah, man. I took a couple hits off of it and handed it back to him. I was coughing. He literally did that training day thing on me. He's like, "I didn't know you like to fly with angels, J-Dub." I was like, "What?" He said, "Yeah, Jerry Wayne, this got hair on in it." And I was like, "Man, are you kidding me?" And to this day, I don't know if he was telling me the truth or screwing with me. I ran home and went to bed because I was worried that I was going to be addicted to heroin. Nothing really happened, but I remember I was real paranoid and freaked out, you know. So to this day, I don't know if he was telling me the truth or he was screwing with me. My favorite thing we used to all do was we would... the whole family, Big Mike and all of them, man, at least once a week on the weekend, they would load up, we'd get cooler and meat, and we'd go over to Bear Creek State Park where they had, not Bear Creek State Park, but Bear Creek Park, where they had volleyball nets set up. And we would go over there and just set up and play volleyball all day long. And just have a ball, man. Just have a good time drinking, cooking meat, playing volleyball. Steve had his cousin come to live with him for a little while. His name was Shane, but we called him Chain. Chain! And Chain was a big boy, maybe 400 pounds, big boy. And Chain was remarkably good at volleyball. We put him in the middle of the court, and we nicknamed him the Hand because he'd stick that big old meat hook up there and get that ball every time. Chain could run the volleyball court from the middle of the volleyball court. Didn't move that much, but he could always get his hand on that ball somehow. And boy could just send it spinning right back across at the other side, you know? He was vicious. That's some of my best memories with his family, is those volleyball games. We would just stay out there for hours. And we were still at an age where I wasn't really drinking or anything. We'd have Dr. Peppers and stuff, but it was just a good time. And every once in a while, the cops come over and be like, hey, y'all can't have alcohol over here, that kind of thing. And Big Mike would go out there and talk to them and get them calmed down. And we would go and hide the beer, and they would hide the beer in the truck, and then that was good enough, you know. He was always up for a minute. I remember the day after prom, we were trying to figure out what to do, and we just drove to Brazos River down there where it goes under the bridge in Richmond, and you used to be able to get down to the river down there. There's a bunch of houses and shit now. It's all private property. But you used to be able to get right down the river, and there was a train bridge. And we just went and jumped off in the Brazos River, spent the whole day swimming in the Brazos River. Alligators and snakes be damned. I wouldn't get in that river now if you paid me. But we had a time of it just down there. It didn't even have swimsuits. Just went swimming in our clothes. Spent all day down there raising hell in the river. He was always up for adventure. And when I was that age, if I didn't have like work or stuff going on with my own job, I would go work with Steve's family to make money. You know, I would go do construction and demo jobs with them. And just be a helper on the job site. And that's where I learned a lot of my construction knowledge, was working with Steve's family. I always say Steve's dad taught me construction, which he did kind of teach. He taught me how to use a speed square and, you know, the basics. But Steve probably taught me more about construction than anybody. I worked with him a lot as a teenager. And we had a falling out a little while after high school. And I honestly don't remember what the falling out was about. I'm pretty sure it was my fault. I had lied about something and got caught in a lie. And Steve's girlfriend was mad at me, so Steve turned his back on me or some kind of thing. And we just kind of drifted apart. We didn't end up talking for many years. Years later, after I first started comedy, Joey and Steve had reconnected and started hanging out again. And Joey brought Steve up to one of my comedy shows, and I reconnected with Steve, ended up hanging out with him again. You know, by that time I was off into my own struggles with drug use. I was using cocaine pretty heavily during that period, and found out Steve and his wife liked to party too, so I started hanging out with them all the time. It's probably detrimental to both of us. But within a few months, I started getting serious about Rachel. I decided to get away from that mess, stop doing it. And Steve and his wife were going through a divorce, and he decided that was the time to amp up his use. I would like go over to his house, man. He'd have an eight ball. I have a ball of coke look like a size of a freaking tennis ball. He'd be shaving bits off of it. And he used to always say, everybody's problems, they don't use it in moderation. But he was not using it in moderation at that point. He was getting bad off on it. And it seemed like he always had it on him, and he was always trying to do it. And I was worried about him. Didn't seem like things were going well. And he was heartbroken about him and his wife splitting up, and that wasn't leading to good behavior and good choices. And they caught up with him. He was at a wedding, and he had some coke in his truck, and he was running out there every once in a while to his truck and doing a little bump. And there just happened to be a cop doing security up at the wedding venue. And the cop looked off in there and saw Steve's goodie bag and waited for Steve to come back out of the truck and do some more and busted him. And, you know, that's a felony. And I think his lawyer got it knocked down some, but he had to go on probation, and he spent some time in jail over it. And the dude still, man, even when he was on probation, man, he was still smoking weed and drinking a gallon of pee cleaner before he took his piss test. I don't know how many probation piss tests he popped, ended up getting more time. And right after me and Rachel got married, I started working with Steve doing construction. I was looking for something. I was looking for a job. The transmission shop had closed and been sold. And so me and Steve started working construction on that property together up there in Conroe. And he was getting rough, man. We were both taking them pain pills. But Steve would take them pills and drink on them, man. He would drink all the time on them, and it would just turn him into a toddler, you know. I'd take those pain pills. I didn't drink on them. At the time, I wasn't really drinking. I'd gotten away from all that other stuff. I took pain pills just so I could go to work, you know, just so I could handle all that stuff we were doing construction-wise, because we were doing side jobs that, like, we would get off work at April Point Sound, and then it wasn't anything for us to go fix a house that a tree fell through or do some crazy other job. I had us working till 9 to 10 o'clock at night, beating our bodies up. But I had Rachel to come home to. I had a sense of something I needed to come home to and keep my head on straight for. He didn't have anything to go home to. Him and Joey were roommate, and it just got worse. Work. I told y'all when I was telling y'all about Giant Tube Sock, like, it just got deeper and deeper. He eventually starts dating one of our friend Shelly had a sister named Jamie, and Steve starts dating her. And that's when he, like, really went off the rails, and she ends up getting pregnant. His daughter was born maybe about 6 or 7 months before Junie was born, my oldest. When my kid was born, something changed in me. Like, maybe it was that thing where everybody says, oh, you're going to grow up if you have a kid. But I didn't want that kind of stuff around my kid anymore. I didn't want people drunk and acting a fool around my kid. I already smoked a little bit of weed every now and then. And I was terrified the government was going to come take my kid away because they were doing that kind of stuff back then. So I didn't want people that were partying and getting out of hand around my kid. I didn't want to be a part of that scene. I didn't want to be around that scene anymore. And I started distancing myself from it. Wasn't in an effort to be mean. I was scared. I was scared of where they were headed. Their parties were getting out of hand. Things were getting out of hand. He showed up at my house one time drunk with his kid in the truck. And that was a little more than I could take. And also, we had done some jobs together, and he owed me some money on those jobs. And what we used to do, me and him would go do these jobs, and we would both chip in for a bottle of the pain pills. But when you got that prescription filled, you had to get these other ones filled. Well, he liked that Soma and Xanax and stuff like that. I didn't mess with that. So he would pay for that part of it, and he would keep the Soma and the Xanax, and then we'd split the pain pill prescription. And we'd take that out of our money from doing the job. But when I stopped needing to do that with him, because I started going to an actual doctor who was prescribing me my stuff, then he, for some reason, I stopped getting my portion of the money from that. And we went back and forth about it. And the thing was, man, if you owed Steve money, man, he would not let it go. He would be up your ass about it. If you know, when I worked for his parents' construction company, they took lunch, whatever they spent on you out of your money before you got it. We, you know, maybe made 50, 60 bucks a day doing day labor. You worked half day, you got paid $30. If it rained out, you got nothing. You know what I mean? Like, these were people that were shy about wanting their portion of money. And especially Steve, he was about the worst one about it, out of all of them, you know? And here it was, man, he like owed me all this money, and it wasn't even a lot. It was, you know, it was a couple hundred bucks, but he kept blowing me off on it. And then he would still like, then he was hitting me up for pills because he couldn't afford his own pills. And he was getting into me deeper. And I finally got really frustrated with him. And I wrote him this, every time I tried to bring it up to him, he would change the subject or whatever. So I just wrote him this long letter like, hey man, I don't want to work with you anymore. I don't want to do stuff with you anymore because I feel like you're screwing me around here. And also feel like you're lying to everybody, and you and your whole family got mad as hell at me one time about lying. And here you are, you're doing the same shit I was doing, but it's okay now because it's you doing it. I don't know what I was trying to accomplish that letter. Didn't accomplish much, but end of friendship. His girlfriend read the letter and decided to get her trashy ass involved, and she was nothing but trash. And it just blew up into a way bigger thing than it needed to be. It was me reaching out to my friend, trying to connect with him and figure out a way to fix things. And maybe I didn't go about it the right way, but it just blew everything apart. It blew everything apart. Everybody, me and Joey's friendship got strained again. Because Joey and them were still hanging out with Steven, I didn't want to go over there and be a part of that anymore. So it felt like, once again, as an adult, I lost all my friends in one fell swoop. And it wasn't long after that me and Rachel, we moved on. You know, we moved to Spring, and we moved up to Conroe. And me and Joey, of course, eventually fixed our friendship, but me and Steve never did. You know, the funniest thing is I seen him one day. I walked up into a store in Conroe to get some fuel. And I walked in this little gas station, and he was in line in front of me. And I watched him pay for his stuff and walk out of the store, and I never said a word because I didn't even know what the hell I would say. And I don't have any animosity towards him either. That's like the thing. It's not animosity. I still love the dude. I disagree with some of his choices. I'm sure he disagreed with some of mine. But he's done me some solids. He was there for, we were there for each other as friends. But I feel like mostly all we did was drag each other down deeper into bullshit. Me and Joey, there's checks and balances. Me and Steve, there's no checks and balances. It was just write a hot check and get high. You know what I mean? It wasn't, we weren't good for each other in that type of situation. I'm sure he's grown up a bunch and he's been through all kind of changes in his life. I can't even imagine what that looks like now. I know being a father will change you. But, you know, we were working at that property, April Sound. I was working as Steve's helper. Steve was wanting to go back and build houses with his brother. He didn't want to do the maintenance stuff anymore. And they come around right before Christmas and said they were going to cut me loose. The day before Christmas Eve, they were going to cut me loose. Just because the budget didn't allow for two guys on the job site. They had hired me to help with cleanup from Hurricane Ike. And we had done a good job. We'd cleaned up and fixed all the damage, and they were going to cut me loose Christmas Eve. And Steve said, no, y'all better keep Jerry because I'm quitting. And Steve quit and allowed me to keep that job. It was a solid move. He had his own reasons, but still a solid move. He could have waited till he was ready or whatever, and he didn't. Like, when Steve was there for you, he was there for you. But once that shit got a hold of him, like, too deep, he just wasn't the same human being anymore. That stuff's probably ruined a lot of friendships. I went and saw his dad before his dad died. Me and Joey went and visited his dad. And I went to his funeral, even though me and Steve weren't particularly close at that time. I went to his father's funeral because Big Mike was important to me. I want to do a whole episode about Big Mike one day, but I'm going to have my buddy Marzi Montazeri, my guitarist buddy, musician buddy, he's going to come over here. We're going to talk about Big Mike together because Big Mike was a whole vibe and a whole experience. I think we'll wrap that up there for today. Get my testimonials. Do some testimonials, if you will. If you will. And our comments from last week. What did we do last week? This week was a... Man, I had these set up. No, they're not pulling up. Oh, there they go. Last week, I went to Mississippi. I didn't get to talk to y'all that much about it. Mississippi was amazing. I had a truly spiritual experience in Mississippi. I drove out there myself, so it was like 6 hours. Well, driving out there was like 8 hours because it was a huge bunch of construction in Baton Rouge. Because there's always construction in Baton Rouge. So it took forever to get out there, but I had a day just to myself in Macomb, Mississippi, and I went out and found Jerry Clower's grave, and I communed with the great one. Spent some time out there. Spent some time in Liberty kind of checking out the places from all those great stories Jerry Clower told while I was growing up. And then I went out and found the crash site memorial for Lynyrd Skynyrd, where they crashed right there in Mississippi. And this lady, rich lady out there, built this huge monument. And I guess they do concerts out there on the anniversary of the plane crash and stuff like that. This beautiful monument. Also hilarious, I got recognized getting it, like walking up to the monument. I got recognized, and I thought that was so funny and like just so on brand. Of course, I get recognized at the Lynyrd Skynyrd Memorial. Where the hell else would I get recognized? That's my second favorite place behind truck stops. I get recognized at truck stops a lot. So that was cool. Met some fans out there and took some pictures. They were cool as shit. And the show in Mississippi was the show I needed after them San Antonio shows. There's a little saying in the business, you're only good as your last show. And if you feel like your last show wasn't a good one, it doesn't leave you in a good headspace. And that last show in San Antonio did not leave me in a good headspace. And the show in Mississippi fixed, that was a rock star night. That crowd came there to have a good time. I was on stage about an hour and 10 minutes. They got all the extras. We banged it out. Plus, I love being somewhere where I'm allowed to make fun of Louisiana freely. And Mississippi is a good place to be if you want to make fun of Louisiana. And Louisiana is kind of like the middle kid between Texas and Mississippi. We just sort of tolerate it. Anyways. It was a magical experience. I came back refreshed and renewed. Did see one of the Mexican trains pulling the cars to Mexico flip a Ford Ranger all over I-12. Got it loose and snaked up. I told a little story about it on the internet. But flipped that Ford Ranger all over the road. Right, I mean, like, I was right there when it happened. And I've been searching news stories for it. I can't find nothing about it. So what I suspect happened is that dude hit the gas and kept going and left that Ford Ranger on the side of I-12. All right, let's get in these testimonials. I had our old buddy, David Beckert. I did not hear you say anything about eating armadillo. I have when I was in Arkansas. You got my beat there, brother. I ain't never had no armadillo. That's, in fact, we used to freak out when our dogs would try to eat armadillo because there was a wives' tale when I was growing up, I don't know if it's true or not, that dogs get leprosy from eating armadillo. And that was like a big fear growth. If your dog cowed down an armadillo, started messing with armadillo, you went and got the dog away from armadillo because dogs screw around and get some leprosy. I never bet armadillo was a leper, but I was told that. One of y'all might correct me and be like, that's some bullshit somebody told you. At Stephen Verne, no 8977. That guy asking you about the wrecking yard and what it's about. Best way I can describe it is that it's place in your heart where you shared good times and bad times with the ones you love. It's a place where we all grew up and learned life lessons in order to become the person we are today. It's a special place where memories are made, and when it's our time to leave and move on to the world that we call life, we end up leaving a piece of our heart and soul with the wrecking yard. Each of us has our own little version of the wrecking yard. One day I myself will be taking one final trip to my own wrecking yard and take one final look at the place for the last time. That is what the wrecking yard means to me. Keep up with the life lessons. We love you, brother. Boy, that's one of... Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. That's a beautiful description. I, too, believe that we all have a little wrecking yard of our own somewhere, each of us. A little wrecking yard in our own life. There's a spot in the book that I was working on yesterday. You day oneers, people from the first season that seen all the episodes, probably remember the episode I tell you about going to see ZZ Top with Uncle Bobby when I was about 25, somewhere in there. About our grand adventure, working on the gay cowboy's hot tub and them giving us tickets to go see ZZ Top. And us going in style is the way only Uncle Bobby could do an event. And I was having to write that whole story for the book and really flesh it out and, you know, get all the details in the scene. And it dawned on me that was my last real rodeo with Uncle Bobby. That's the time we went to the Cosmic Shack. That's the last time I really spent any time with him alone. Just me and him. That was the last time I went to Kilgore looking for him. Go chase that life that he lived with him. And when I got to the end of that chapter, I wrote, there's this thing, you know, he called me Pooh Bear. And he told me he called me Pooh Bear because he said he was like Christopher Robbins. One day he was going to outgrow me. And then the very opposite thing happened. I outgrew him. But when I was in up that chapter, I wrote something along the lines of, I pointed that Ford towards Houston. I left 100-acre wood and Christopher Robin for the last time. And boy, if that line didn't punch me, if that line didn't punch me in the face, that's another one I'm going to have a hard time reading on that damn audiobook. That's one I'm going to have to practice. Because, boy, it punched me and my editor. Me and Adam both had bloody noses the rest of the night. At Gene Bond, thanks for another great one, JW. It's funny to look back and see a different picture of events in the past. While you may have been proud of an incident at the time, you can now look back and see what kind of dumbass you were in the moment. If I knew then what I know now. Yeah, Gene, I don't think I'd want to have to redo any of it. God knows I'd probably screw it up the second time around. But it is, I look back at these moments, I'm talking about Steve, and I'm trying to capture the parts of Steve I love without focusing. Y'all have heard the bad. I don't want to focus on the bad. I was trying to focus on the parts I love, the family, being together, hanging out. Because I could tell y'all stories about me and Steve being idiots all day long, and it's just not stuff I'm proud of, you know. We were a bad match together sometimes. Neither one of us talked the other one down. In fact, we just egged each other on until shit got really out of hand. He had that old CTN pickup truck for a long time, buddy. He put some dual exhaust on it. You hear it plap, 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 plap. It wasn't fast, but plap, plap, plapping everywhere he went. And then him and his dad like sanded it down. They were going to paint it, and they sanded it down over the course of a couple weekends. And then they primered it, and then Steve wrecked it, and then they fixed that and primered that. And then it just stayed primer for a long time. And then the frame cracked in half. Steve jumped it through a ditch and cracked the frame on it and traded it in on a Ford Mustang when him and his wife first got married. So it was, some dealership got hooked on that one because that thing had a cracked frame when they got it. Of course, knowing how they do them, I don't think them dealerships ever take a beating on a trade-in. I don't think there's any way you win on a trade-in. As always, I thank you guys for sharing your Sunday with me. Spend a little quiet time going over some things. Hope the obstacles in your life are making way. I know this is a time of year where, at least I did when I worked in the trades, this is the time of year where money starts getting tight. And you got to worry about Christmas and the job starts slowing down. People's money gets scared because they're worrying about Christmas. And then especially down here in the South, the weather's about to get terrible and jobs get rained out. It's hard to plan jobs when you're in the trades working outside. This is a stressful time of year for guys in that situation. I used to tell people about this time of year every year I'd start hearing that song, "If We Make It Through December." Almost like a funeral march. If this is that time of year for you and your business and occupation, I feel you, brother. I hope it's a good year. I hope it's not one of them bad ones. Luckily, it looks like our weather's been pretty mild so far. I'm hoping for a mild winter for us down here. Keep guys working, getting that paycheck in. People need their money now more than ever. Everything's more expensive. It's getting harder to scratch by out here. You ain't telling me nothing. I love you guys. Hope you're looking forward to a decent Christmas. Maybe some time this week with your families. Hope you have a good Thanksgiving. I'm glad my sister's going to be here. I like having a house full of people on Thanksgiving. We got a small house, so adding one or two people makes it feel like a full house. And we got our new little friend. This is Ophelia's going to be her first Thanksgiving with us. And she has really just taken over our entire household. She is running, calling the shots. She now sleeps in the bed with me and Rachel. It did not take her long to worm her way into our hearts and take over our little household. And she's just been a delight, an endless source of enjoyment for me. Let's close this up and get out of here for the day. You know, there comes a point in your life where you don't just change, you rise. Not gentle, not graceful, not photogenic. I'm talking about climbing hand over hand up out of a pit you dug with your own two hands while the old version of you tries to drag you back down by the ankle. And that's when it happens. The moment you start moving toward the light, somebody down in the shadows starts hollering your name like you're doing something wrong. Because they missed the broken version of you. The easy version. The predictable version. The version that didn't challenge them to face their own darkness. Some folks don't want you healed. Not because they hate you, but because your journey forces them to look at their own stagnation. And it is easier to call you changed than it is to admit they've been standing still for 10 damn years. I think about my brother Steve when I say that. We were welded together in chaos. We shared laughter and bad decisions and too many nights I'm not proud of. We were two halves of the same busted compass. But when I started clawing my way towards something better, he didn't see hope. He saw abandonment. He saw betrayal. He saw me stepping out of a shadow he was still married to. I didn't rise above him. I didn't outrun him. I just outgrew the darkness we used to sit in together. That's the part nobody wants to say out loud. When you start walking towards a life that doesn't hurt as much, the people who won't move will swear you acting brand new. They'll say you're judging them. They'll paint you as the villain in a story where all you ever did was try to survive. You can lose your entire future trying to stay loyal to a chapter you were meant to finish. You can drown trying to save someone who's grabbing you harder than the water is. You can die a little at a time, staying small, just to keep someone else comfortable. Some goodbyes don't blow up. They just whisper. An inch of distance here. A missed call there. A silence that grows until the friendship you love becomes a ghost. And it breaks you. Because nothing hurts like losing someone who's still alive. But just listen to me. You are not meant to sacrifice your journey for someone who refuses to take the first step on theirs. Your peace is worth defending. Your healing is worth defending. Your purpose is worth defending. Every damn time. You can love somebody with everything you've got and still know that walking next to them will burn you to the ground. You can pray for them. You can hope for them. You can carry their memory like a stone in your pocket and still refuse to follow them into the dark. I miss my friend more than I say out loud. And I hope wherever he is, the shadows finally loosen their grip and let a little light in. I didn't walk away because I stopped loving him. I walked away because survival demanded movement. Because the road to becoming who you're meant to be doesn't always accommodate everyone you love. And sometimes the doorway to your better life opens at the exact place someone else's path ends. I'm JW and I love you. Hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving. I'll see you. See you next week. Y'all be safe. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer place come summertime. Mm-hmm.